All right, I guess we'll call this meeting to order. Let's rise for the flag salute.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Laura, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Director Sesenia, Director Forcroy,
I'm here.
Director Gatchel,
Here.
Vice President Womack,
Present.
President Ohilsky.
Absent. Wrong agenda. Okay. So we're gonna change things from here on out and do the public safety reports first to try to get you guys out of here. Not make you listen to our regular business. Do we have fire
We
online?
do not. Paul's on vacation. Kevin's here. He's part of, has a consent agenda item regarding fire inspection. So he's here for the duration.
All right. Oh, does Kevin have a report or?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. So we didn't save him.
No, we did not.
Do we have a sheriff online?
We do not. We only have CHP online.
Okay, CHP. And Chuck just came in.
All right. Right. Good evening. You guys all ready for me?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Hope everybody's been doing well. Good to see you all again. This past month it was pretty uneventful so far out there in Los Osos, which is good in our line of work. We had two non-injury crashes out there. One non-injury hit and one crash that we investigated. And we removed four impaired drivers from the road, so four DUI arrests. One of those was involving a vehicle which did crash. Nothing, no major injuries or any major crashes like that out there. But once again, it's pretty good month. So hopefully now moving into the summer season, it's probably going to be a little bit busier, but we're always here for you. We have recently just de deployed our radar trailer out onto LOVR, heading out towards Los Osos, trying to help with controlling some of that speed out there. And we also will be putting additional units out there to address some of those concerns. So that's the end of my report. And if I have any questions for you guys.
All right, any questions? I have noticed the CHP presence out there, so thank you.
Oh, awesome.
All
Thank you.
right. So we will start our public hearing to adopt proposal fiscal year 2024-2025 budget.
Chris, I hate to interrupt, but we should probably take public comment on the safety reports real quick.
Oh, thank you. All right, let's open it up for public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
All right, and no one in the boardroom. All right, now we will start with our public hearing to adopt the proposed fiscal year 2024-2025 budget.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. As you are aware, we did go over the preliminary budget at our May 2nd meeting, but I just wanted to review for folks that maybe didn't see that to go over a few of the goals and objectives. It's, of course, to fund our operations and programs. Also fund our reserves and accomplish the work plans that we've established for our various committees. I always want to give a shout out to our staff. They're amazing in helping us put th together the budget. This is definitely a group effort, and then packaging it all up is always a lot of work. So thank you, staff. As I said, we presented the prelim budget at the May 2nd meeting. So basically, I'm going to summarize things that may have changed since May 2nd. There's just a few, mostly in Fund 301 fire. So with that, we'll jump in. This isn't an update, but basically, I wanted to make people aware that the board did make a decision on how to allocate Zone A funds. We chose option two, which is up here on the screen and in the report. Basically, the only major change was we did not provide an allocation to Parks and Rec this time around, and did a little bit more for drainage. getting into the funds, and please stop me as we go if you have any questions. Fund 100 administration, we did not have any changes since the May 2nd meeting. Just as a recap, the major requests were mostly for cost of living increases, and then increases in general employee costs like medical and retirement contributions and insurance. And of course, one of the larger things is the November election. With that, the summary table shows where those, the increased revenue, which is based on the cost increases from the budget, and then how personnel accounts for about 17,000 of the increases, and service and supply about 22,000, 17,000 of which is for the elections. If there's no questions on that, we move on to, Fund 200, which there is absolutely no changes. This one and Fund 200 are pretty basic. So we're not seeing any increases here, except for a slight increase in the transfers. Moving on to Fund 301, we did have quite a few things change here. Mainly, I'll get into those, but we changed the revenue projections for Zone A by adding that money to revenues. We did have one change that came in from Chief Province regarding how they do their oxygen supplies. So there's about a $1,300 increase in that particular line item from $500 to $1,800. One of the big ones is the addition of about $34,000 for personal protection equipment. This is a cost that we will incur it's every 10 years. Basically, CAL FIRE now requires that their regular employees have two sets of turnouts, so one can be decontaminated and still have use of the other one. And so that's on us to pay for, and we decided, Chief Owens and I, the unit chief, and I decided we'd do that from our operating budget instead of through Schedule A. Saves us about $1,500 in admin costs, overhead costs. So that's why we're seeing this. And like I said, we will not see this cost again for quite a while. The other big change, of course, is Schedule A. The Schedule A came in at about $2.8 million. That's about a $300 increase or a 10.5% over last year. If you recall, last year we saw quite a large increase. It was about 24%. So we've seen quite a bit of escalation in costs, mainly due to labor and union negotiations. This particular one, they're anticipating going from a 72-hour work week or shift to a 66-hour. And this requires a position being added at the station to have the coverage that they need. It also includes a 4.71% countywide overhead charge, which we're currently disputing. And so you'll see in my recommendation later on that I think we should go ahead and approve Schedule A minus that overhead. Is there any questions on those? I know that's probably our biggest change to date, but it's, except for the overhead, our countywide overhead, I think it matches what we had anticipated. And again, the summary table, which shows where we've added some revenue, we've definitely added some costs and services and supplies around the Schedule A. But anyways, by adding that, when I was doing the budget, I didn't receive the Schedule A cost till Thursday midday, and we had to get the agenda out Friday. And the impact was that $105,000 negative. We can cover that either by operating cash, which we have a lot in the checking account for Fund 301, but also you have to understand the Schedule A is a price not to exceed or a cost not to exceed. And so typically we would get a refund or not spend up to that $2.8 million. So I wouldn't worry about what I'm saying. I wouldn't worry about that negative we're seeing there. Fund 400, no changes, similar to 200, like I said. Again, just some transfer increase there. Fund 500, not a lot to change here. We did get the Zone A, the allocation of $50,000 that we've had anticipated for Zone A. But in during May, we did talk with the crew, and we wanted to move forward with putting a variable frequency drive on our 10th Street well. This will add efficiencies to operations and actually extend the life of the pump and motor so they're not turning off and on, like going ramping up to 100%. And so the cost of that's about $22,000. So we included that in the GL for repair and maintenance on wells. Just for a recap, since this is one of our bigger funds, we did have adjustments, personnel costs, again, cost of living, and then some of the same things we saw in Fund 100 for insurance, medical insurance, and other costs. But the big things we're looking at in services and supplies is an upgrade to our billing software, an update to our water master plan, which is long, long overdue. And we did put in money to implement the California zero emission vehicle requirements, but the jury's still out on whether we'll move on that or not. So again, I'll just move to the summary slide on this. You can see where we're seeing some increase, or where the increases happen. Our projected revenues are about what we were expecting. And then, of course, services and supplies, which I just outlined for you. Any questions on Fund 500, since it's one of the larger ones? If not, we'll keep going. Again, wastewater is very straightforward. This is mainly an administration cost for the bond. So no changes since May 2nd. No changes for 650, but just to kind of recap this, because we did make some changes, we will see a solid waste base year application coming up, and we will need to retain some consulting services. So that is in the budget, and that we are funding the reserve, which we have not done in the past 2 years. So we're looking at funding that reserve. And to remind you, we will be looking at all our reserve policies coming up later this summer. Again, the reflection of where the reserves, they're 100,000, and that we will have some services and supply consulting services, which we'd already budgeted for in last year's. Drainage, again, no changes from May 2nd, except for the Zone A property tax allocation, which will help, as we know, what drainage has been going through. Again, nothing out of the ordinary in that budget, as we anticipate to try to get back to normal and hopefully look for FEMA reimbursement at some point in the future.
What do you mean by it's the Zone A is going to help on that fund?
Well, we in the property tax allocation that we gave it, that's what.
But that money, I mean, we had a bunch of capital outlay to deal with Cabrillo Basin. That's what you're talking about, right?
Right.
And that's what we're looking for FEMA reimbursement from?
That's where, yeah, we're looking for FEMA reimbursement on that.
So and that then would potentially be, is that a full reimbursement that we're hoping for, or is that just part of it?
Well, from FEMA, it's only going to mostly be a 75%. With the caveat that Cal OES may kick in another percentage to be determined. So we may get that down to somewhere between 6 and 10% that will come out of our district.
And then are they currently in a debit that they're paying interest?
Interest? No.
Okay, they're not.
For FEMA, is that what?
No.
Sorry.
The drainage account, is that yes. currently in a debit so that we can have it be either less of a debit?
Well, that makes sense on a money standpoint, cash for cash. But I mean, one thing here is that this budget shows $70,000 for capital outlay in the next year. And we have a giant capital project that needs to be done up there. I mean, obviously that we're not budgeting that for the next year, right?
No, we're not, just because we don't exactly know what that project or the there's, it's looks like it, you know, you've seen the recommendation from Yeh and Associates on a slurry wall, a cutoff wall for the whole north side of the basin. Mm-hmm. FEMA may fund a quarter of that about. Mm-hmm. Then I'm looking for 404 mitigation funds, which is a different. So I'm still looking to see if we can get reimbursement for some of that work, since it's imperative that we actually get the entire project done.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's probably a year or two out before we figure all that out.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's two things I see here. One is We as a group are going to have to figure out how we're going to fund this capital project to fix the Cabrillo Basin, because we don't have the money in this account, and using Zone A tax or other methods are there needs to be a discussion about where the money is going to come from, for sure, in my opinion. And then the second part is, we're on borrowed time already. That the fix that we did was, you know, a 2-year fix.
It's more than that.
But we don't have any piece of paper that says that.
Well, if you talk to the geotechnical engineer and M&S, mainly geotechnical, the fix we have there is fine. The main concern with the fix is the liner and the life of it. And that's like a 5-year, you know.
Yeah, but our report says 2.
Conservative.
So anyways, I want to see that project happen sooner than later, for sure. And I want to start talking about, as a group, how we're going to pay for it and where the money's going to come from.
Is it, I know all I've been trying to do is figure out how all the pieces go together to get to a project.
Sure. No, and I
understand
the enormity of it. Yeah. But we keep dancing around this part of it. And at some point, we're going to have to come up with a huge chunk of money. And
well, possibly not. That's the thing.
Well, even if FEMA does a quarter of it, it's still a chunk of money.
Right. And it's the 404 may jump in and pay for a good chunk of it as well.
Okay. So
what's the ballpark of the 404 money?
The problem with 404 money is it's like a competitive grant through Cal OES. Oh. And so it's not like
I like our chances on that.
Yeah. And we're talking about, I'm trying to think, probably a $500,000, because if FEMA will cover about 300,000, I think, somewhere in there. I don't keep me to these numbers, but then
talking ballpark numbers, right, so we can wrap our head around it, mm-hmm, a little bit. We will not, everything's
right. Very so, confusing. You know, we're talking probably around a $500,000 or so by the time, because of course there'll have to be some civil drawings, that kind of thing, from the geotechnical information we have. So I don't know about the soft costs on that in project management. But, you know, we've got a $300,000 loan from water that we're paying back. I think by the time we have a project, we'll have that loan paid off, and we will have, like you're saying, Matthew, figure out where do we get the other 500 plus thousand to fund. You know, my feeling is that if we can get FEMA to reimburse for what we've spent, which will be about 500,000,
we can use those funds.
We can use those funds, roll those funds over.
I like that idea.
So anyway, it's definitely a timing thing.
Do we expect any support from the county in terms of putting a project together?
No. Not at this point.
I'm glad you bring it up. I think it is important, and it is something that should be
absolutely
near the top of our to-do list. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. It strikes me too that we need to talk about, like, I mean, the if we use the reimbursement from FEMA, that money, and we've already paid back the loan out of basically, I mean, where's that money coming from? I mean, it's a lot of talking about, well, wait a second, who's paying for all of this?
Well, if you recall, drainage had about $600,000 in cash and reserves, and that's how we made it through the cash flow of.
But that comes from the bucket on the property taxes, right?
No, that, well, it is. I mean, but that's from the drainage income, which you can see the revenues, mm-hmm, are about 275, but that includes the what did we say on the 134,000. So subtract 134 from the 275. That's about what we get from property tax.
Yeah, well, Even the Schedule A is property tax.
Yeah, I guess I'm not following what you're saying.
Well, what I'm saying,
that 600,000 was in drain fund 800's cash.
Right. But we're spending all of the fund,
yeah,
for the entire district.
Yes.
On one drainage basin.
Yes.
That's not for the whole entire district.
Well, where do you want to get them funding from? Well,
I think we need to make sure that that's pretty. Like,
I'm just looking at cash flow and what we can afford to pay. We only have X amount of revenue.
Sure.
You know, we can go borrow money. We can go do a lot of different things, but
right.
We can borrow from ourselves. So
hopefully we have enough money in there for other issues, other drainage issues around the district.
Well, yeah. I can't offer you a solution.
Are there other drainage issues?
I'm purely looking at what money we have and what obligations we have, whether it's right or wrong.
There's a bigger discussion regarding drainage that exactly. needs to happen with the county. And yes. I don't know, you know, it doesn't do us any good to hash that here, I don't think.
Well, we've Matthew and I have attempted to have the discussion with the county, but they haven't been open to it yet.
At all, still.
In my opinion, it's worth at least having a small discussion.
Oh, so I
it stays out.
Well, okay, you're right. You're right about that.
Because otherwise, it just.
Well, what I would suggest we don't do it during the budget here, and that we all agendize something that we can talk specifically to, and I'm more prepared with the numbers and the information.
I maybe that's a utility committee budget or agenda item, and that's then we bring case. Something back here.
Right. Yeah.
Because we obviously have an engaged utility advisory committee. Our last meeting was fruitful. Huh? A lot of discussion going on. Right. So it's a good committee.
Yeah, that would be a good spot.
Okay.
Thank you. I think we just need to start.
No, we need to follow up.
I think
on
you're
that.
Right.
We need to support Ron on that.
Yeah. Okay. Good comment. All right, let's move on.
Last one is Parks and Rec, and there are no changes here. It's been fairly quiet and not much activity here, at least so far. Things may change with the Safe Cuesta Inlet and the Sunnyside School and other conversations that are going on. The Utility Advisory Committee did recommend the adoption of funds 5 and 800. We discussed that a couple of meetings ago with them, and the Finance Advisory Committee recommended the approval as well, and they reviewed the entire document and actually on last Monday night reviewed pretty much what I just presented to you tonight. So with that, I have a couple of motions here. Recommendations for motion is to approve the budget, but with the caveat that we
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So anyway, to not approve the countywide overhead and just direct staff to continue the dialogue with the county to try to resolve that issue.
Okay. Do we have any other questions and comments before?
I have one question. I didn't really add up the numbers, but what is our total budget?
Boy, I don't know if I've added it up completely.
Since we're talking about the GAM limit.
Oh, it's well under that.
I know, but it's like, but I don't know what that number is, but that's okay. I can get out a calculator later. Let's open this up for public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. No public comment online.
Thank you. All right. Now I bring it back to the committee.
I move that the board adopt resolution 2024-05 approving the fiscal year 2024-2025 final budget with the exception of Fund 301 Schedule A countywide overhead charge, and that we direct staff to continue to work with the county to resolve the issues with the countywide overhead and other related county fire contract concerns.
I'll second that.
I think we need a roll call vote, please.
Yes, we do. Director Cinchisenia.
Yes.
Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Gatchel.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will agendize or get the conversation going on drainage.
Sounds good. All right, general action items, water supply and status report. Take it away, Ron.
Yes, this has been something I've been wanting to do for a while. And a lot of this was wanting to, you know, we did the update to the water shortage contingency plan. So I thought this was the perfect year to begin it. I'll definitely be doing a similar report about this time of year in the future, but basically this is to provide the board and community with an overview of where we're at, you know, what our water supply look like, our operations, production history, the rainfall totals, you know, going back, capital water use trends, and just other information. So with that, for folks that aren't familiar with our groundwater basin, it is adjudicated and managed by the coordinated effort between the water purveyors, Golden State Water, us, and ST Mutual, and counties involved. And that forms the Basin Management Committee, and that we oversee the implementation of the groundwater management plan known as the Basin Plan. And that's kind of the reason I'm explaining that is some of our activities are based on the programs, program A and C, basically, in the Basin Plan. But I did want to start off by just looking at, you know, what our water supply is. We have 7 operating wells. Bay Oaks will be number 8. We have the 4 lower aquifer wells at Palisades, 8th Street, 10th Street, and South Bay. And then we have 3 upper aquifer wells at 3rd Street, 8th Street, and South Bay. So we have two locations with both lower and upper aquifer wells. It has been kind of a ride since I got here in 2019. We've had to rehab 3 of the 4 lower aquifer wells, which is an indication of age. So far, all the rehabilitations have worked. We almost lost 10th Street during that rehab project, meaning losing the bottom of it, where we would have lost a lot of production, but we were successful at the end. And every time a well does go down, it puts stress on the other wells. And that's where you see those run times, like from Palisades and 8th Street lower, which we're trying to really curtail. Talking about the programs, program A, it does entail shifting and or adding production from the upper aquifer. And like I said, we have 3 upper aquifer wells. They're not without issues. 3rd Street's an older well located right on the bay. It has a history of elevated chrome 6, which is coming under regulation. We're right at the threshold, so that could add issues where we may have to blend to get it below the MCL, but we still have a couple of years to figure that one out. But it is an important well. It actually runs 24/7, and it only goes off when the tanks are full. So it is a very important well to us. South Bay well requires nitrate removal. It's very low producing in terms of gallons per minute, so it really doesn't add much to our supply. Plus, it's very expensive to maintain. So it's there when we need it, but it's not operated at full capacity. 8th Street Upper has been a great well, completed just last year. It's definitely added a lot of extra capacity to our system, and it's been working well in coordination with the 8th Street lower. So it's been a very successful project. Program C is shifting pumping from the western portion to the middle or central and east portions. We're nearing completion, and that'll add a lot of integrity to our operations and infrastructure, plus add some safe yield. As you can see with the lower aquifer wells being older and not operating at what we'd say the best optimum capacity, that this will add a lot of yield or sustainability to us. The other project we've been working on since October 2022 is the water resiliency project, and that's strategy to bring imported water to the basin during wet years and to offset our groundwater pumping. It's been slow going. We did complete preliminary engineering and design, and we have an environmental assessment work completed. Next is to secure project financing so we complete design and initiate construction of the pipeline, and we still need to negotiate with the county to put water in that. But I've been working hard on both of those. Nothing to really report out, but I am still optimistic that we're going to be able to see some activity on that in the next year and some more information coming before the board. Moving over to water production, you know, our key goal through the basin plan has been to decrease our production, not only from the wells on the western side, but also it also helps us track production throughout the basin so we understand how we're doing in our management of the basin. The tracking also provides us with the information on customer use, water can, you know, water loss in our systems, and supports our, you know, revenue or tracking our revenues. Going back, as you can see, going back to 2015, production has been decreasing steadily. We did have that spike there in 2017. I don't remember exactly what was going on there. Had a little another blip in 2020. We do know that was from COVID and everyone being home. But generally, we are trending down. And as you can see, especially in 2023, all that rain made a fairly large contribution to production decreasing. Rainfall, we do track cumulative impacts of the rainfall amount levels so we can see what that does to the basin recharge and the water level metrics for that. The interesting thing, and is a little bit confusing, and I've been thinking about this, we do use a different rainfall year, April to March. This was originally established in our water shortage contingency plan because if we were seeing below rainfall and water supplies, groundwater supplies going down, it would allow us to react in shortly after March. We may want to change that because it does add a little bit of confusion with different water years, and we're adding one here. But that was the rationale behind it, was to be able to respond in the spring or early summer if we needed to move a stage in our drought water shortage contingency plan. So the rainfall since 2015, again, you can see it's been pretty much all over the place. A couple of good years in 2015, 16, 17, an off year, a good year, and three dry years, and then now a couple of good years. So it's that's what we should expect, and we don't know when we're going to hit those multiple, because if you go back above back further than 2015, 16, we had a four-year period in there that was fairly dry, more way less than the 13 inches. So we just, that's something we always have to keep in on our mind. Residential per capita water use is defined as the amount of water used per person per day. That includes indoor and outdoor use, so people understand that's a bigger number than they think of how much they actually use. We use a calculation developed by the state of California, which, you know, takes a percentage or monthly production, the percentage of both single and multifamily residential accounts, to get a percentage of our total water use, and the population is divided in there by the number of days to get the number that you'll see on this slide. As you can see, we've been hovering around that 60 gallons per person per day for quite a while, a few ups and downs in there. But again, in 2023, you can see we did drop down quite a bit. Again, these trends are really good. They are staying level or dropping as you can see by the graph. Moving on to our water shortage contingency plan. As I said, we updated it back in October 2023. The major modifications were to change the triggers. We were kind of stuck, if I can go back here, to rainfall. The way it was, if you didn't get or average or above two consecutive years, we couldn't change. So if you're looking at many of these years, like 13 inches to 23 to 13 to 13 to 13, 13, even here, you wouldn't change. So we were kind of just stuck by the triggers in a stage that probably didn't really reflect where we should be in the community. So with that, we changed those triggers to really reflect more of what we were seeing on an operational basis, and that we changed them to cumulative total over multiple years. And we also added the water level metric from the Basin Management Committee as an indicator on what the district should do in terms of going in and out of stages. So the exist or the new criteria is that we can exit stage three and upon determination by the board of directors, if the equivalent rainfall is greater than or equal to the average by March 31st of two consecutive years is received, or the BMC's spring water level metric increases, then, and that would allow us to move to a different stage down. So using those two criteria, the rainfall, if you're using the two-year average, you know, we're at 34, and that we've actually, if you go back to 21, 22, and then 2022, 23, we've had 47. For the 2023-24, it's at 52. So we've kind of met that one criteria, but it is an or. So if the water level metric has been coming up slowly, but until, you know, this last year, it actually did almost a 2-foot jump. So that criteria has been met as well. So what does that mean when we change? And the recommendation is to go to a stage two, and that's a conversation we had at the Utility Advisory Committee. So what that means is in stage three, the current goal for per capita water use is 46. We would go to 52. Now, if you notice, we're at around 60, which is actually 58 is a stage one. So we're actually more closer mirroring a stage one, but the recommendation is to go to a stage two. It would eliminate the implementation of water allocations and financial penalties, which we never implemented, but that was in there during our discussion. If you remember, I said, if we're going to go to be in a stage, we should mean it, you know, instead of just saying, well, we're here and it's not really showing the community we're serious about a shortage. And then finally, there is language in stage three that no new intent to serve application would be considered. Well, this would eliminate that we could consider them. That is a board decision if and when those would ever come in. So like I said, the Utility Advisory Committee recommended that the board approve moving from the stage two to stage three. And so with that, I can take any questions.
You did mean moving from three to two.
Yes, I did. Okay. Thank you.
I have a question. So if we have average rainfall for another 2 years, would we go up to stage one?
That would be a board decision. I mean, right now we could go to a stage one based on the criteria. And like I said, we discussed that at UAC and they were more comfortable. And I wasn't adamant one way or another. They suggested a two, so that's why. And so next year, if we have another average or above, I could come back and suggest stage one.
So. Oh, I was just kind of curious, like how we get out of it.
Mm-hmm. And what the difference would be moving to a stage one, because here we're already eliminating the no new intent to serve application. So that's a big deal, big step. You know, we never penalized anybody, but we're officially eliminating that in this stage. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you're technically talking about raising. No one cares about how many gallons per day we ask them to use. They conserve what they feel comfortable with, I think.
Well, unless you're putting pressure on. I mean,
it could happen. But what would happen if we go to stage one in addition to what we're dropping off here?
Boy, I didn't look at that.
Okay.
Seriously, because I didn't think
it just seems like the serious consequences are being taken with this step moving to stage two.
Yes. Because, you know, stage one is more in that voluntary mode, you know, where you say, you know, don't let water run off. And so anyway, it's just, again, it's like the per capita, you know, like right now, what we send, Margaret sends out letters to our high water users. And we'll continue to do that because basically we're still going to be at a level where we will keep.
I forget about those kind of efforts that happen regarding when you're in.
And you're going to, I'm going to be back with a revised water conservation program incentives and the whole thing. I'm working with Gold State Water to kind of get our programs to mirror each other a little better. And then we're looking at monies that may come
from that low-income sewer hookup to help promote it. So you'll see some more information on water conservation coming up.
Okay, I was just curious. Any other questions? Let's open this up for public comment, please.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
Okay, I'll bring it back to committee.
I'll make a motion, but first I just wanted to thank you, Ron, for organizing that whole water shortage contingency plan and going through that. And I thought that was a big step that we made to get that sorted out last year, and then making actions on it this year makes a lot of sense. So I move that we receive and file the 23-24 water supply and status report and adopt resolution 2024-06 approving moving from a stage 3 water supply emergency to stage 2.
I'll second that.
A roll call vote, please.
Director Fourcroy?
Yes.
Director Gatchell?
Yes.
Director Sesenia?
Yes.
Vice President Womack?
Yes.
And then, Ken, I just please confirm, Director Gatchell, you're the one who seconded it, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, you beat so out.
Yes, I couldn't.
Chuck here. Chuck didn't turn on his mic in time.
They were both leaning in at the same time, so I wasn't 100% certain.
Oh, yeah, yes. I'm glad you clarified. Is that the sheriff back there? Were you going to give a report?
Yes, ma'am. You're ready. I can do that now.
Yes, let's go a little. We try to put you guys at the beginning so you wouldn't have to listen to all our business. But we'll go to the sheriff's report. Thanks for coming.
I apologize for being late. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Senior Deputy Tartaglia. All right. I'm Senior Deputy Tartaglia with the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office. I'm based here in the Los Osos Station. Yeah, this is our new deputy. This is Deputy Medina.
Hello.
So he'll be joining me here today. Commander McDonald asked me to provide a report. And so these will be statistics for the dates of February 1st through February 29th, 2024, in the Los Osos community. We had a total of 6 assaults or batteries that are broken down into 2 domestic violence incidents and 4 batteries. We had 25 calls for service related to disturbances, 19 of which were general disturbances. 2 were loud music, 2 were neighbor disputes, and we had 1 family dispute and 1 actual fight. In February, we had 4 calls for service regarding burglary. 2 of those were vehicle burglaries, 1 was a commercial burglary, and 1 was a residential burglary, which was determined to be unfounded. We also had 4 theft reports, 3 were petty thefts, and 1 was a shoplifting. We had 1 call for a vandalism to a vehicle that turned out to be a civil issue between 2 parties. This is a shock for me. We had no calls for service related to mail theft. So that's a good thing for us. I think that's a good trend to let's continue that one. We had 2 phone scams. One was related to a bank card and another one was related to computer crime. We had 13 suspicious calls. 6 were suspicious persons, 5 were suspicious circumstances, and 2 were suspicious vehicles. We also had a total of 66 law enforcement stops. 2 of those were bicycle stops, 11 of them were pedestrians, and 53 were vehicle stops. And a total of 26 calls for service, it's not really a call for service, self-initiated activity for law enforcement, patrol activity, 9 of which were parked vehicle checks, 11 were on-site activities, so they may have seen something at a location, got out and checked on it. 3 foot patrols, 1 extra patrol, and 2 patrol checks. Are there any questions?
How many days of training does it take to be able to deal with all the different categories that you have to break down, even disturbances? There were like 17 different types of disturbances.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that I've got there yet.
Okay.
I've been here for 6 years, and I still haven't figured them all out. Every day is a new adventure.
You do dial it in. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, Fish, thank you very much for being here.
Well, we're happy to be here.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great to see you in person.
All right. Sorry for being late, but
no
glad
worries.
We could see all your faces.
Yeah.
No, you were just here at the normal time when it would have been your term.
Yeah. You would have been right on time.
Well, calls for service. Yeah. All right. Have a good night.
Thanks. You. All right.
Let's open it up for comments.
We might want to take public comment just for that.
Oh, all right. Let's take public comment on the sheriff's report.
Thanks, Ron. I was about to say something. If you'd like to make a public comment on the sheriff's
report. That was Daniel.
If you'd like to make a public comment on the sheriff's report, please raise your hand or come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
Okay. Then let's open it up for public comment for items not on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand or come up to the podium.
All right. Good evening. My name is Andrea Luker. I'm speaking on behalf of the REACT Alliance. Again, this month, REACT is a nonpartisan 501c3 grassroots organization that is in opposition to the proposed offshore wind projects off our coast. We're also working to ensure that the general public understands that what these projects entail now and into the future. Last month when I was here, our alliance was working to have the California Coastal Commission refuse to rubber stamp a coastal development permit for Equinor Wind, also known as Atlas Wind, to begin their site surveys in state waters, zero coastline to 3 miles out approximately. These surveys use high decibel sound up to 217 decibels. I think a jet taking off is 180 decibels, just to give you a feeling of how loud that is. The site surveys also involve taking core samples of the ocean floor, penetrating up to 65 feet into the ocean floor. You may remember from last month that the executive director of the California Coastal Commission had signed off this coastal development permit as a de minimis waiver, which means that the executive director made a determination that the aforementioned described surveys had no potential for any adverse effect, either individually or cumulatively, on coastal resources. That's a head scratcher. Luckily, through our call to action, over 100 letters were sent to the coastal commissioners asking for Equinor, Atlas, Wind's coastal development permit to go through a normal, full-fledged public process. And I'm happy to report that a few days before the May coastal hearing, Equinor pulled their permit and will resubmit in the future. It's not on June in Morro Bay, for what we anticipate to be a normal coastal development permit process. If you participated in letter writing or contacting the commissioners, thank you. Most importantly, though, I want to invite you today, you and the viewing public, to attend a PowerPoint presentation this upcoming Monday, June 10th, beginning at 6 p.m. at the South Bay Community Center. It's entitled Central Coast Offshore Wind Impacts and Consequences. Members of the REACT Alliance will be presenting, and then we always do a Q&A afterwards, 6 to 8 p.m. The presentation has been given multiple times all over the county, and we're thrilled to bring our presentation to Los Osos. And we also invite you to join us at the South Bay, the South T Pier in Morro Bay this Saturday, June 8th, from noon to 1. We'll be having a rally and a peaceful stroll along the Morro Bay Embarcadero in celebration of World Oceans Day, June 8th, noon, South T Pier, Morro Bay. Lots of other events are coming up in terms of offshore wind and the REACT Alliance, and great information can be found at our website, which is reactalliance.org. Thanks. Have a good meeting. I'd stay, but the Celtics are on, so.
Thanks, Andrea.
There's no public comment online.
All right. Administrative and committee reports. Let's see. General manager report first.
The new format. Few things I'd like to bring to the board and public's attention. Continuing to work on the new solid waste rate setting process. We had a all-day workshop last Thursday in San Luis Obispo. We're working towards a regional approach where the city of San Luis Obispo and the CSD were leading the effort, but we had little participation, but we were able to get every agency that is served by Waste Connections on board to do a regional approach, how the applications are received, reviewed, and then put into place. I think it's going to make it a lot more transparent, a lot easier for both the hauler and the agencies to understand why there's differences in where the increases are coming from. So anyway, I'm very excited about it. We should have I'm thinking we'll have this wrapped up by the end of July. So you'll be seeing something early to midsummer. It appears that I finally have all the information back into FEMA. I spent the last almost 2.5 months redoing what was put in about a year ago. I mean, so anyway, I'm hoping, fingers are crossed, that we start hearing information and get obligated, they call it. And once we're obligated, money will start flowing. And then that will be another piece of our funding for the long-term solution. And then finally, we received an award from the American Society of Civil Engineers, about the Outstanding Emergency Response Project for 2023.
Wonderful.
So anyway, I kind of bittersweet, but
did that come with a contribution to the permanent fix? No, came with that.
No, just a lot of hand clapping and pat on the back.
We wish we didn't have to do that, but it's nice that they recognize all your hard work and the work of staff.
It was a team effort, and our staff and our consultants were amazing. And Hartzell Construction. With that, I can answer any questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. I guess that's a great job all three of those things are really great to hear, especially the rate setting. In my opinion, that's a huge win for whole region.
I think the whole region is going to benefit from that.
I guess I just wanted to ask, we have a lot of different pieces going on. You've spent a lot of time with FEMA, and we're going to get reimbursed, but then we have this long-term solution. We have design, permitting, construction management going to happen eventually in that direction. Do you think that is an area that we're going to need more help with, that you could use help with, like from a district
engineer more than likely or something? More than likely.
I'm just, as we're kind of talking about that, and 2024 is half over all of a sudden, and just strikes me that we need to, as a board, start thinking about how we can support the GM, because there's going to be a lot of things. My next question is just a little bit about the fire. We did our standard cover study. Mm-hmm. We did our facility assessment, and kind of those next steps were a strategic plan, and that's going to involve some capital for improvements at Station 15. So anyways, there's going to be a lot of things.
Yes.
So I just wanted to bring that up when the whole board's here.
Yes.
So what kind of help do you think would be helpful? Because there's always been a lot on your plate.
Yeah,
and Laura's very helpful.
Yeah, the basin is going to be a project. And I know Matthew understands it from an engineering perspective, what that actually means. And I think once that gets rolling, it will take maybe either more help from Wallace Group and or another engineering firm. I've worked through the budget, or the staff and I have worked through a lot of things this spring, as you can tell by a very thick agenda packet for you tonight. But my plan for the emergency services strategic plan is to get moving on that now. That kind of had to take a back burner, again, priorities. But the drainage basin is my thing that keeps me up at night on how we're going to solve that one. I think I'm working through our contract issues with CAL FIRE, making headway there. Had a good meeting with Supervisor Gibson, and we're getting movement now. Maybe not everything I'd wanted, but it's happening. So all these little pieces that have been hanging out there, we've been working on for a long time, I see coming to a close. But they're, as these solid waste things, way more time than I anticipated, trying to do a regional thing versus just our own thing. I think it's a better product. So anyway.
So what kind of help would be? I mean, it's one thing to get more professional help, like hiring an engineering firm, but what about for you in the office? Is there something?
I think in the office we're doing fine.
I kind of think I shared Matthew's concern that you might be overloaded.
Ron handles it. I am constantly amazed by the number of things that you can keep moving forward all at once. And there's no, I'm not going at any discredit whatsoever.
Oh, no,
you do
no,
a great job.
That way.
But yeah, I just know that, that project by itself would wrap somebody like me up for months,
right.
Months and a year maybe. And I don't want to get behind that ball. I'd rather we explore what that could look like and get somebody or more resources sooner rather than later.
Yeah. You know what I think we need to do. And you know, this is my financial hat is have this discussion and look at, because, you know, bringing in resources costs money.
Yeah.
And so we just need to go into this with, you know, eyes wide open on what this means. And then again, it's, I think there's, you know, we'll have to get a little creative, but I think there's ways we can afford all this. But again, when in my mind, I'm going, okay, if this piece comes in, we get a little bit of money to keep that piece moving, you know, it's going to be this kind of.
Well, and I think that was my point about bringing up how we're paying for it all.
Right.
It is. I think we need as a group to be shouldering, having those discussions. So it's not, you're not the only one thinking about how you're going to make, you know, all the pieces together. And I think if we can come up with funding and, you know, if you're, you know, the timeframes and kind of the timeline about, well, we apply for this grant, we have this money maybe, but we're going to have to cover things in the meantime or whatever right. that looks like.
Right.
I feel like that's going to set us up to be able to make some decisions and make, you know, like you said, maybe we lean on some sort of engineering company to provide basically a dedicated district engineer for a while or whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but or well, maybe, you know, it's a, maybe it's a assistant GM. I have no idea. But
well, let's have that conversation.
That's the start of the discussion. Is this something we can handle strictly by contracts, mm-hmm. you know, as they come up and are needed? Or do we need somebody in the office? And that's the basic mm-hmm. start of the discussion. So let's be willing to just talk about everything.
Okay.
Okay. Another agenda item for a future meeting. That's a good point, tonight. Though. I'm glad.
How do we make sure that it all happens? It needs to happen.
I agree with you. I think that's a good point.
Appreciate it. Well, we'll get that on the agenda.
Sounds good.
I have one more question. Hate to add to the plate. Did you see, I think a few weeks ago, the EPA issued a cybersecurity threat and alert to all water yes. systems?
Right.
And I know there was Russian hacker attempts in April to several Texas water systems that caused water to overflow. And right. these were small water systems.
Right.
So I know we don't want to publicly talk about details of what we're doing or what we're addressing for security reasons, but I think it would be good from maybe a potential closed session to discuss our plans and how we meet the EPA's pieces on that.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit, and you may have or may not have heard my spiel on this is that we're so low tech right now, it'd be hard to hack unless you've got a phone line. But that said, we're pushing SCADA ahead this next year.
Right.
And so that's where it's going to be critical that we have safeguards
mm-hmm.
because then we'll be exposed. I think right now, you know, we have some radio communication between Palisades and South Bay, and that's the extent other than phone lines.
You'd have to run around and manually turn on our valves if you wanted to.
Yeah,
create havoc.
But I saw that, and it what shocked me about it was that it was small systems.
Yes,
because you always think, oh, who cares about, you know, low sosos or you know, but yeah, that will be a concern as we move forward.
Well, if you're a hacker, you may practice somewhere on the smaller fish. You know, I don't know these things, but you're not going to take down the big cities to start with, probably.
Well, and, even cellular or anything like that can be. Anything connected to the internet or those types of things or networks can be hacked.
Well, so. And if you recall, our server has been hacked twice since I've been here.
Right.
And so I am aware of the damage it can do or the chaos, I should say.
It just came to mind. I just want to make sure we're addressing those things or we're
talking. Well, right now we're still manual mostly. Yeah. Like the people have to physically come in. So that works in our favor.
So,
but thank you, Troy, for that comment, because it is it's something we have to address.
Yeah, and that's part of the EPA, like the Safe Water Drinking Act, is cybersecurity.
Right. Mm.
All right, cool. Good point to bring up. Thank you.
Well, as we get into this discussion about SCADA, there's a lot to talk about with that in security and just generally how it gets operated and how we want that to be, like what that looks like.
Right.
Remote operations, people actually there. All of those kinds of things are important discussions.
Yeah, I will be bringing, an RFP to you. Maybe in July, it might be August, to do a design build for the SCADA system. Because we had preliminary work done a couple of years ago by AECOM. Mm-hmm. So we had all the basic what it's going to look like component type thing. But there really wasn't security, I'm sure it was in there. I'm not a SCADA expert, but as we move forward with that design build, we'll have to talk about that.
Yeah, I'd hope there's like two-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and hopefully what we can get around is just like some examples about what we're talking about too.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to that point where we want to spend money on this, when you say SCADA, there is a whole level of automation we can do. I think it's important that everybody understands what we're doing and how that's going to affect operations or make it easier or whatever that is. But it's a little bit general and broad.
Right.
Like, well, we're doing SCADA.
I don't know if you ever saw the report that was generated. I could share that with you.
And there's a lot to unpack out of that report.
Mm-hmm.
So
again, that's something I have to rely on experts on. That's I know how it works, and that's about it. Yeah.
Yes. Like, this agenda is not long enough.
Good. A lot of times you go to a plant that has a similar system. And go for a tour and check it out.
Right.
Talk to the operators and talk to the managers. And I'm up for field trips.
Yeah, well, kind of what we've been following is Nipomo CSD went through this a few years ago now, maybe three. And so we've been kind of following their path because they're similar, except they have wastewater as well.
Yeah.
But you're looking at operational wells basically, and then pumps. Then you have your, alarms for chlorination, if the chlorine pump goes down. So it's not super complicated, but it's really the ability for an operator to do a lot of work from the phone or a computer at home instead of coming in. Now alarm goes off, you have to come in and clear it.
This is a discussion right there.
Right.
I mean, if you're not there, you can't see what's happening.
Right.
So anyways, it'll be fun.
Good comments. Are we done with general manager report? Should I move to the next? Do we have anyone for the Chamber of Commerce report?
No.
That would be LOCAC.
LOCAC. Let's see what happened. I'm going off my mind here because I left my notes at home.
Yeah, that was mostly the county talking about the community plan.
Right. And started with Dan Heimel giving a summary of the basin management, the annual monitoring report. Yeah, right. He's been asked to kind of present water reports to LOCAC now. So that happened. And then Claire came on with... At the time, we didn't know that the Coastal Commission meeting would be on the 13th. That's next week. But it will be. And a couple of important items there. One, the Morro Bay Cayucas bicycle path connector will be on that agenda as well. And then the community plan update for Los Osos. And the history there is that the county submitted to the Coastal Commission back in 2020 a
community plan that talked about a 1%, or actually it was one little over 1% growth rate, I think, at the time. And
it was 1.3.
Yeah, 1.3. Coastal Commission has proposed changes, and that'll be the subject of discussion next week. And if they approve some recommended changes, that'll go back to the county for approval in the fall, September, October, and then back to the Coastal Commission probably in December or January for a final approval. Everything that's been going on behind the scenes is what has been talked about, I guess, in social media, or there was a good Tribune article that
John Lent wrote.
Yeah, I didn't realize that he is Sierra to the Sea, that little online publication. That's always, I appreciate his stories. It looks like negotiations, the 1.3 growth rate is probably not going to be a part of the approval, the recommendations. It'll be somewhere under 1%. And all of this was talked about actually at the UAC because it came from the letter that the purveyors wrote in support of the county's efforts. Couple of things to remember that Claire brought up. The HCP implementation isn't set for approval until this fall. So credits aren't even going to be available from the HCP until then. And all development, the 1%, 0.5%, whatever it winds up being, will be subject to Title 19 offsets. So theoretically, all growth is going to be offset water neutral. So those are kind of the backstory to the Coastal Commission hearing next week, the 13th in Morro Bay. Mr. Gibson brought up some issues on the homeless fight, the efforts to kind of help there. Point in time count apparently dropped the homeless count from 1,900 2 years ago to 1,500 now, as close as you can get those estimates. And actually, they had a much bigger volunteer effort this year, so I think it's probably a more accurate count. County allocated $4 million to various nonprofits to help with housing issues. Capsulo got the portion that comes to the coast. There was one significant single-family residential discussion in Cabrillo Estates, but it involved a potential road vacation, a relinquishment of half the road that got controversial because there was a discussion about whether or not county the fire crew was going to go along with this. And the relinquishment of half the road would have prevented any use of a turnout there for any kind of emergency services, fire response, that kind of thing. It was kind of a controversial issue. LOCAC went ahead and approved the residents, but not the road relinquishment, which would have actually only allowed a detached garage in addition to the attached garage of the residents. So that was the upshot of that. And they elected new officers. Deborah Howe will be the chair for the upcoming year. Trish Bartel, vice chair. Jim Stanfield remains treasurer. Gary Katayama will be dealing with the website. And anyone that wants to be secretary, they're still looking for one. And that was the LOCAC meeting. But again, Coastal Commission will be in Morro Bay on the 13th. I don't know what time.
Where?
In Morro Bay.
At the end of Morro Bay? Probably, yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay. Great report. Any questions about the LOCAC report? All right. I think Utilities Advisory Committee.
Interesting discussion about the letter that we signed off on at our last board meeting. Some people were reluctant about the 1%, not understanding fully that it was tied to Title 19. There was a question about sustainable yield and whether or not we should be allowing growth at all if we're at the sustainable yield target. All those things, I think, will be resolved in the discussions that come out of next week's meeting. But I appreciate that committee. They're so engaged and
Thank you. Any questions on the utility advisory report? Okay, finance. Just the usual. The committee recommended approval of the warrant register and receive and file the financial reports. Just the regular. I really appreciate that we have a full committee. They're very good. And like Lisa is going on vacation for 4 months. And so she has the ability to leave because there were many times where she was the only committee member. So anyway, just a thank you to my committee members on finance.
Good committee.
Yes. Any questions? Okay, moving along. No report. Any directors' announcements of district and community interests or and reports of on attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, seminars?
I don't know if this would really qualify, but I was on a Zoom meeting with Mr. Gibson and some CAPSLO board members. And because I'm on CAPSLO through this board, I kind of think maybe there's a link there. And it had to do with the $4 million that were allocated to various nonprofits. The staff had recommended a certain allocation, and the Homeless Services Advisory Committee had changed some of that, taken away some of the money that went to CAPSLO, who actually provides the services on the coast. We've got ECHO, and South County has got some pretty strong organizations, but we don't here. And so I think the outcome of that was the next board meeting, they went back to staff recommendation, and we'll be seeing the staff recommended funds out here to help because, you know, the whole Oklahoma Kansas Avenue attempt came about from Palisades. So the county stepped up to try and make things better there. I appreciate that so much. But obviously, it was a last ditch, not very well thought out effort, and it's gone away. And so who knows? I mean, we're already seeing Turry Road action. Morro Bay's had a lot of problems in the last year or so. So I'm glad that that funding was returned to the coast. And yeah, that was my Zoom meeting.
Thank you.
Chris?
Oh, yes?
I want to apologize. On 6I for Basin Management Committee, there was a meeting. And I forgot to delete the no meeting, no report. And I also want to mention that the BMC meeting is going to be on June 12th instead of the 19th. They're going to meet before the Coastal Commission.
Thank you. All right. Chuck, do you have a Basin Management Committee report for us? Yeah, you're busy.
And that was a lot on the annual report.
Yeah, that was the annual monitor. Yeah, we did not talk about the letter. We're going to talk about the letter. And thank you for that reminder that the BMC is going to be meeting a week early so that we can meet before the Coastal Commission meeting.
Good idea.
Because we will be talking about the letter that the purveyor sent, just so that there's a discussion in the community about the fact that 1% is the number that's been thrown out there, 68 housing equivalent units or whatever that figure is. But when you start talking 0.5% or less, and the fact that the HCP credits aren't going to be available all that quickly, and everything's tied to Title 19, which makes it water neutral, all of that should have been a part of a discussion before that letter was sent, and it didn't happen. And so I appreciate Dan wanting to bring that up and schedule a meeting a week early. And yes, thank you for bringing that up.
All right, thanks for your report. Thank you, Laura, for making sure we address that.
It takes a village.
Do we have any previously asked questions?
We do not.
Okay, let me open, can I open this up for public comment?
You should see if anybody wants to pull anything from consent first.
Oh, does anyone want to pull anything from consent? Okay.
If you'd like to make a public comment on any of the administrative and committee reports or the consent agenda, please raise your hand or come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
Okay.
If I could just quickly thank the CAL FIRE rep for being here for the consent agenda. We had the G
related to the state mandated annual fire inspections.
Oh, should we pull that and let him speak on it?
No, it was just for questions.
Does anyone have any questions?
Wait, it's not our exciting full agenda that
I did give him the offer him the opportunity to zoom in. And wow.
It's nice. I like the people coming in person.
Absolutely.
I miss that.
I'll make a motion to receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
I believe we're going to need a roll call vote.
Yes, Director Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Cesena.
Yes.
Director Gatchell.
Yes.
Vice President Womack.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. All right. We have lots of future agenda items.
Yes.
All right. Well, one of those is, what kind of help could you use?
Yes. Seriously.
Because there's a lot that's been going on. I feel like we've been accomplishing, or you've been accomplishing a lot. So that's...
We've been very fortunate to accomplish quite a bit.
Yeah. So
I actually have one more to add. I'd like to get a report at a future agendized report at a future meeting by no means am talking about next month, but I'd like to have some statistics around the number of calls for service that Station 15 responds to in Montana de Oro State Park. I'd like that report to include a description of how Station 15 responds and then how we are back covered when our apparatus or both, or I don't know exactly how it works, but I want to make sure the board does. And then what that looks like as far as where our paramedics are and who's covering the actual district, why that happens. I want us to have a report on that. We're dealing with countywide overhead that they're asking for. Recently, there was an article about Patriot Valley Road and a change in who's responsible for that, which opens the door for state parks to start potentially charging an MDO. And I want to make it real clear what this community is providing out there.
Right.
And we're not collecting sales tax or occupancy tax or any of those things. So I would like to get that information kind of lined up in the future.
Okay. No, I think that'd be great.
That's a great comment.
Sounds good.
Because it's not just MDO. It is in the Terry Road, LOVR corridor. And I noticed today we were as far out as County Operations Center.
Cayucas has a second fire station now, a substation.
Oh, I'm sorry, but
Cayucas has their second fire station now. I guess they're going to be opening up soon. I know they've got that whole North Coast probably up to Cambria that they have to deal with and split there.
And there's a station up in Cambria as well.
Right.
I wanted to add, and hopefully, because I know we're going to probably give that to Chief Province, but on like an annual basis. Because I know we have these statistics, aid given, aid received, but it doesn't tell the whole story. And I want to make sure that we highlight that. And eventually, I'm hoping the board would be agreeable potentially to send that report in a letter to potentially state parks and the county.
Okay.
All right. Do we have any closing board comments, Chuck?
I like all of Matthew's questions tonight.
I skipped last month. I've been saving them up.
School is out as of today.
Watch out for the kids.
Oh, yes.
Especially going to get fries and sodas.
Yes.
On Ninth Street.
That's what I was prompting, but I like your comment. Anything else? That's
your
All right. Comment. I will adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That was a lot.
Yeah.